Okay, so get ready, because today we are diving deep, deep into the psychology of the false self, which I gotta say, you've sent over some really fascinating research about, especially on those defenses people develop, like, being emotionally overwhelmed or emotionally numb.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that about it being hidden because it's true. These defenses, they really are like these masks we wear
Right.
to protect a much more, how do you say, fragile, true self. And it's not about, judging or labeling anyone. It's more about understanding behavior, maybe even our own, through a more compassionate lens.
Compassion is key. I love that. And I do think this research could be a huge eye-opener for so many people out there, especially in, relationships.
Absolutely.
But let's back up for a second and break down this whole false self thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I found super interesting was the work of therapist Michael Etz, who really digs into those early experiences, particularly in childhood, and how they can shape these very
Oh,
defenses.
absolutely. He's fantastic. Think about a baby, completely dependent on their caregivers, right? Those earliest interactions, they become their whole world.
They're everything.
Yeah, the foundation for how they view themselves, how they view others. In a perfect world, in an ideal scenario, a baby's needs are met consistently with love, care, and they internalize this sense of goodness, this belief that they are worthy and loved. But, and here's the but, when those needs aren't consistently met, it can really impact a child's developing sense of self in some, well, pretty profound ways.
It's so true. Like that saying, the child is father of the man. Those early years, those early imprints, they stick with us.
They really do.
That actually gives this example of a baby crying. And instead of receiving comfort, the parent may be struggling with their own issues, like depression.
Right, or anxiety, any number of
Yeah,
things.
exactly.
Yeah.
Either withdraw or become even more distressed themselves. How does that impact a child long term?
Oh, it can be, well, incredibly formative. Etz, he writes that in those moments, the infant learns to suppress their needs, their very needs, to avoid upsetting the one person they depend on for survival.
It's heavy.
You think about that. A baby knowing how to, what, become emotionally numb or overwhelmed to adapt to their caregiver. Yeah.
It's heartbreaking in a way, but also amazing.
It is.
The
It's.
resilience, even at that young age,
The resilience is incredible.
it does make you wonder about the impact, right?
Yeah.
Down the line.
It makes you wonder about a lot of things. And, those early experiences, they really lay the foundation for how we approach all relationships, even later in life. But we have to remember, caregivers, they're not, to blame. It's not about blame. It's a complex thing, right? Various factors, socioeconomic stress, relationship issues, mental health,
The whole cocktail.
right? It's a whole cocktail of things.
It's not black and white putting blame. It's about understanding the nuance and how these early experiences really do end up shaping us.
Absolutely. It's layers upon layers.
Okay, so we've got this foundation of the false self. What happens next? Take us to the toddler years.
Oh, the toddler years. Now we're talking. That's when things really, start to get interesting.
Oh boy, here we go.
Because toddlers, they're all about testing those boundaries, asserting their independence. Little scientists running experiments. If I do this, what will happen?
I love that analogy. The little scientists.
And the way caregivers respond to these experiments.
Because let's face it, every parent's different.
Oh, totally. Some are stricter, some are more, go with the flow. And that further shapes the child's sense of self, their understanding of relationships.
So are you saying, like, if a child learns that they can kind of get their way through a big emotional outburst?
Oh, you're reading my mind. That's exactly what I'm saying. Etz suggests that can really contribute to, what we're calling those emotionally overwhelmed defenses, where intense emotions become tools, almost
Like a
like
superpower, almost.
exactly a superpower to get what they need. On the flip side, a child who's constantly told they're the problem child or made to feel like a burden, they might internalize that, impact their self-worth, potentially leading to those more emotionally numbed defenses.
It's like those early dynamics, often
Definitely
subconscious,
subconscious.
become the blueprints for how we
Yes.
navigate the world and, of course, how we form relationships. And
Exactly.
that's where things, I think, get really juicy. How do these defenses, emotionally numbed, emotionally overwhelmed, how do they actually show up in our adult
Wow,
relationships?
that's a million-dollar question.
Right.
And that is exactly where we're headed next. Get ready for some serious aha moments, people. It's like we take these patterns, these blueprints of the false self, right into our adult relationships.
It's true.
It's like we're casting almost the people around us into these roles
mm-hmm.
that fit these old narratives.
It's kind of creepy when you think about it like that. Like
it is a little creepy.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, where is that coming from? And that's why I think this research, this could be a game changer for people to understand really the dynamics of their relationships. So let's get into it. Let's talk about those aha moments. How does someone with emotionally numbed defenses, how do they typically approach a relationship? What does that look like?
Okay, so picture this, right? You meet someone new. They're completely charming right off the bat.
Okay.
Shower you with compliments. Oh, stop it. You're making me blush.
Flattery, the whole nine yards.
Who doesn't love a little flattery?
Right. Exactly. Feels fantastic, right? Yeah. You're the most fascinating person in the world.
I mean, yeah. Kind of hard to resist, right?
Yeah.
So what's the catch?
The catch is, and Etz describes this as grooming in a way.
Right.
It's a way for the emotionally numbed person to secure that initial validation they crave.
Mm.
They need to feel special, superior, and all that praise reinforces that.
Gotcha. So the charm.
Yes.
It's a means to an end.
It's not always going to last.
Okay. So that initial charm offensive, it's not going to last forever. What happens?
It can turn into something, less appealing. Criticism, judgment, you know, a constant need to be one step ahead. Always looking for flaws, for confirmation that there's still the better one in the relationship.
Better, not in terms of like, you know, compatibility or shared values, but better as in...
Exactly.
Like more accomplished,
yeah.
More successful, more...
Yeah. Put together, more...
Okay, wow. So it's almost transactional?
Very transactional, you said.
Instead of really connecting.
Tates, he quotes one of his patients as saying, and I love this quote, he said, it's not about finding the right person, it's about finding someone better.
Wow.
It's like collecting desirable attributes.
Right, like checking boxes.
Checking boxes, exactly. Instead of actually connecting with a human being, you know what I mean?
Right, like a person.
A person with feelings and, you know.
Yeah, it's a little bleak.
It is a little bleak, but... You'd think with that outlook, they'd be jumping from relationship to relationship.
Constantly looking for that upgrade.
Always looking for the upgrade. But it's not always the case. Sometimes someone with these defenses, they might stay in a relationship for years,
right,
even if it's not, you know.
Even if it's not meeting their needs.
Not fulfilling. Because, think about it, external factors, keeping up appearances,
sure.
Maybe protecting assets,
yeah.
Kids, those things might outweigh the need for a genuine connection.
So they're making like a calculated decision.
A cost-benefit analysis.
Logic over love.
Logic over love. But what about those deeper emotions? You can't just shut them off completely, can you?
Right. They're still human.
Exactly. And that's where it gets interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes those emotions, they come out in, not so healthy ways.
Yeah.
Etz talks about Schadenfreude.
Which is
taking pleasure in other people's misfortunes
mm-hmm.
as a way to regulate their own sense of self-worth.
So like if a coworker's project fails,
yes,
they secretly feel a sense of relief.
Maybe even a little bit of superiority. Like, see, I'm more competent.
It's so subtle.
It's very subtle.
Wow. So it's like they're always comparing.
Always comparing.
Always measuring themselves against others.
Keeping score, almost.
That's got to be exhausting.
It's exhausting. And lonely.
Even in a relationship, to be constantly doing that, it's like you're never really present.
You're never really present. You're never really connecting. And what's really interesting
yeah.
is that it's always outward, this focus.
Yeah.
Etz found that people with these defenses, they rarely turn that critical eye inward.
It's always someone else's fault. Always. Their problem, their issue, never theirs.
Exactly. So if a relationship's not working...
It's the other person.
It's their shortcomings, their flaws. Yeah. It's never, ever them.
And this plays out in families too, right?
Absolutely. You see it all the time. They might zero in on one child, the problem child.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The scapegoat.
Mm, right.
For all the family's dysfunctions while remaining totally oblivious.
To their own role.
To their own role in the whole thing.
So they come into couples therapy, let's say.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
And they've got this whole laundry list.
A laundry list of their partner's flaws.
Right. Here's what's wrong with them. Fix it.
And they say it with such certainty, like they've got it all figured out. You know, they might even slap a label on it like, oh, they're clearly this or they have that.
But in reality,
it's their own defenses.
Creating the very problems they're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Projecting.
Yeah, it's got to be a tough cycle to break.
Oh, incredibly tough. because it takes a lot of, well, self-awareness, willingness to, you know, turn that lens inward, which is terrifying.
Right, because their whole sense of self is built on deflecting that.
Exactly, deflecting any blame, any responsibility, which is why, you know, it's so important to talk about the other side of this too.
Okay, yes. Let's talk about emotionally overwhelmed defenses,
mm-hmm.
the other end of the spectrum. How do they navigate relationships?
Well, remember how we were talking about those early experiences?
Yeah.
That need to kind of gain control through big emotional displays.
Right. Right.
That often gets amplified in their adult relationships.
Okay, so we're talking maybe prone to more explosive arguments.
Easily hurt feelings, constantly needing reassurance.
You're getting it. And it's not that they're, you know,
being dramatic.
Dramatic or too emotional.
Right.
It's that their emotional regulation, their internal thermostat, mm-hmm. it's wired differently.
Because of those early experiences.
Because of those early experiences. They might see threats everywhere.
Right, when there aren't any.
Exactly.
Or maybe they just perceive them more strongly.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which, of course, leads to those, you know.
Big reactions. So it's like they're always braced for impact. Like waiting for the other shoe to drop.
That's a great way to put it.
Waiting for the love to be taken away.
Yeah, because that fear of abandonment, it runs deep.
Right, and to avoid that.
They might unconsciously use relationships to try and regulate those emotions, seeking validation.
Reassurance, anything to soothe those old wounds.
They're just looking for that safety and security.
Exactly. That feeling of, you're not going to leave me, you know?
Which can lead them to partners who...
Who might not be the best for them.
Right. Who aren't giving them that in a healthy way, at least.
Right. Or who are even taking advantage of that need.
So they might overlook red flags.
Oh, yeah.
Minimize bad behavior.
Because the alternative, that abandonment, is just, it's too much.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. So then those big emotional outbursts happen when...
When they feel that security threatened.
Right. When those buttons get pushed.
When those buttons get pushed, it's like a defense mechanism.
So it's not about the dishes in the sink, really.
It's not about the dishes. It's about something much, much deeper.
It's that fear of being left, of not being good enough. Yes. It's a way to regain control when they feel powerless.
It's like a pressure cooker.
Yeah, it is like a pressure cooker.
Things build and build and then.
Explosion.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's important to remember.
Yeah.
This isn't about manipulation.
No, it's not calculated.
It's not coming from a conscious place of, I'm going to manipulate you now.
It's coming from that wounded place.
It's coming from that hurt inner child, those unmet needs.
Right. It's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's like we've been, I don't know, on this emotional roller coaster today. It's a lot. But so fascinating, right?
It really is, isn't it? All these nuances to the false self.
Right. And even though, I mean, it's clear, these defenses, they can cause some real problems, especially in relationships.
But sure.
They serve a purpose, right?
Absolutely. Remember, we're talking about survival mechanisms here.
Right, like they're trying to protect us.
Exactly. Protecting that vulnerable, true self from getting hurt again, you know?
Like a fortress around the heart, almost.
That's a great way to put it. That's exactly what it is. It's like... You know, a fortress that's been built brick by brick to keep that vulnerability safe.
But what's that saying? The walls that protect us can also imprison us. Something like that.
It says the wall that protects also imprisons. And it's so true.
Right. Because these defenses, they can also hold us back from really connecting with people, right?
Next.
From experiencing true intimacy.
You're spot on. It's like a double-edged sword in a way. It's like, how can we honor those defenses, those parts of us that are just trying to protect us?
Right. They were there for a reason.
Exactly.
But also, how can we, you know, maybe open up a little, let some light in?
It's a balancing act for sure. But before we get too ahead of ourselves, I think it's worth looking at some of those deeper psychological mechanisms that are at play here.
Okay. Yes. Like those fears we've been dancing around.
Exactly. Because remember, underneath these defenses, often there's a lot of fear. Etz talks about dependency rage, for example.
Oh, right. Tell me more about that.
It's this intense anger, often unconscious,
okay.
that comes from having those early needs, those dependency needs.
Which we all have, by the way. We're all born dependent.
Exactly. It's a normal part of being human.
Totally.
But when those needs aren't met consistently, when those early relationships don't feel safe, it can create this well of anger. And in adults, that might show up as, I don't know, helplessness, frustration, even. Yeah. And for someone with emotionally numbed defenses, you know, who's terrified of that abandonment.
Oh, absolutely. They've built a wall against that.
Exactly. that fear can actually fuel a need to be in control.
To protect themselves.
Exactly. Control those emotions, control the relationship, even control their partner sometimes, all to avoid ever feeling that vulnerability again.
It's a defense, really.
It is. It's a huge defense. And then there's dependency terror, which is interesting because it's less about being abandoned by others and more about being terrified of our own vulnerability.
Like needing someone else.
Yes. It's like this deep discomfort with evading need, dependence, any of that.
Wow. It's like they've turned that fear inward almost.
Exactly. It's almost like a defense against even forming those deep attachments in the first place, because if you don't need anyone, you can't be hurt.
It's a defense mechanism on top of a defense mechanism.
Exactly. Layers upon layers, right?
Right. And all of that, it plays into that superiority impulse we were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah.
That need to feel above it all, in control, to protect against those feelings of shame, vulnerability.
It's all connected, like pieces of a puzzle, you know? These defense mechanisms, they work together.
Yeah.
Creating this complex web of behavior, beliefs that can be incredibly challenging to untangle, especially when you factor in family dynamics.
Because it's not just our childhoods, right? It's like these patterns, they can get reinforced throughout our lives.
You got it. Etz talks about this too, how we often seek out relationships that actually validate those old blueprints, even if they're not good for us.
It's like we're drawn to what's familiar, even if it's painful.
It's like this unconscious pull. And this is where the idea of narcissistic supply comes in.
Oh, yeah. Tell me more about that.
It's like that need to surround yourself with people who constantly affirm that false self, that mask you're wearing.
Okay.
Even if, honestly, it's all superficial.
And even if those relationships are hurting us, ultimately.
Exactly. Because on some level, it feels safer than facing those deeper fears, you know?
So how do we break free? If these patterns are so deeply ingrained, if it's all we've ever known, how do we even begin to have healthier, more fulfilling relationships?
That's the million-dollar question, right? And it's not easy, I'm not going to lie, but it starts with awareness. It starts with recognizing those patterns.
In ourselves.
In ourselves, exactly. And saying, hey, I see you. I see what's happening here.
It's about understanding where those patterns came from, giving ourselves some grace for that.
Exactly. It's not about judgment. It's about compassion for ourselves and for the people in our lives.
Which is, I think, a good theme for today, compassion.
Compassion is key. And that's also where therapy can be really helpful.
Oh, absolutely. That's a safe space to really, really dig deep.
To shine a light on those unconscious patterns, those things we're doing that maybe aren't serving us anymore.
And what's so interesting, to me at least, is that Etz points out that people with emotionally overwhelmed defenses, they might be more likely to seek therapy on their own.
That makes sense, right? Because they're more in touch with their emotions.
They're feeling it all.
They're feeling it all, which can be really painful.
Right. So they're more motivated, perhaps, to find some relief.
Exactly. Whereas someone with more emotionally numbed defenses, well, they might be a little more resistant to therapy.
Because they've numbed it all out.
Exactly. It's like, what problem? I don't have a problem. You're the problem.
Right. That outward focus.
Always. But you know what I always think about when we're talking about this?
What's that?
That story Etz tells about the three friends injured in the war.
Oh, right. The one where two of the friends, they're working so hard to recover.
Yeah. And the third friend, he keeps insisting he doesn't feel any pain.
Even though he's, what, in a wheelchair?
Yes, in a wheelchair. And it's only at the very end when we learn that both of his parents are also in wheelchairs.
Wow, yeah.
That we understand this family's pattern of denial, their way of coping, their way of dealing with pain, vulnerability, all of it.
That's powerful.
It really is, because it shows how these patterns get passed down, how those early blueprints, they really shape how we respond to life's challenges.
And it gives me chills, that story, because it reminds me that healing is possible.
Absolutely.
But it takes a lot of honesty, a lot of self-compassion, and sometimes, yeah, the support of a therapist or someone who can hold that space for us.
It's about acknowledging those defenses, understanding the role they played, and then asking ourselves, okay, what now? You know, how can I choose a different path forward? How can I create relationships built on, you know, authenticity, on genuine connection?
Not on fear and control, right? Those old patterns.
Exactly. It's about breaking free from those old patterns and stepping into, well, a new way of being.
It's a journey, for sure.
A lifelong journey with lots of twists and turns. But ultimately, I think it's about reclaiming those authentic selves and creating a life where true intimacy, true connection, it's possible.
I love that. And on that note, I think we've done a pretty duck dive today.
We really have.
Into this whole idea of the false self, exploring those defenses, how they show up in our relationships.
How they're shaped by those early experiences.
Right. And I hope this has given our listeners maybe a new lens to view their own relationships, their own patterns, and most importantly, to approach themselves and others with a little more compassion.
That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. So until next time, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the human experience.
It's been a pleasure, as always.